Good morning, everybody. Thank you for having me here today. Is everybody comfortable? Are you happy? I know I am. I've been looking forward to meeting you for years. My father, Art Lester, as you've already heard, was a minister here for 3 summers some years ago. Some of you may remember him. He's about this tall, and he looks like this. He's often spoken to me of his great fondness of the time he spent here with you. He says, this is one of the finest churches where he has ministered. I can see why he loves it. Have you ever felt when entering a building for the first time that it's alive? That it has a soul? What do you think? Yeah? That's how I feel now. This church has a soul. So what is it that gives a place like this a soul? Well, architecture, art, history, they all play a part, certainly. This is a beautiful church. This building has a history. It's special. It's storied. It's wonderful. There are many personal stories reflected here. All of the prayers, weddings, baptisms, and funerals that must have taken place here over the years. The stones are saturated with the emotions and hopes of the hundreds or thousands of people who have worshiped, celebrated, and mourned here for more than a century and a half. I can feel it. But more than its stones and mortar, what makes it truly alive is the hope, faith, and love that you bring with you every Sunday. It's these things that make this place so special. Have you ever felt that a building is holy? When I first entered this place, that was what I expected to feel, and I was right. It's difficult to describe holiness, isn't it? Sometimes it's something that speaks to you deep inside. Sometimes you can't quite put your finger on it, but you recognize it. I suggest that this is because it's something you feel with the soul, not the ordinary senses of the body. So what makes this place holy? Is it because God is present? That can't be it, because God is present everywhere. Is it because people pray here? I don't think that's it either. Somebody I know well, a woman of faith, is afraid of flying. She prays whenever she gets on an airplane and maybe all the way to her destination. When traveling with her, I have often looked around at the faces of fellow travelers and seen quite a few of them surreptitiously praying, just like she was. Does that make the airplane holy? Probably not. So what is it then? Let me give you a hint. I'm going to read you a lovely little poem by Yehoshua November, a Hasidic Jewish poet. The poem is How a Place Becomes Holy. It's from his first poetry collection, God's Optimism. It goes like this. Sometimes a man will start crying in the middle of the street without knowing why or for whom. It is as though someone else is standing there holding his briefcase, wearing his coat. And from beneath the rust of years come to his tongue the words of his childhood. I'm sorry, and God, and do not be far from me. And just as suddenly, the tears are gone, and the man walks back into his life, and the place where he cried becomes holy. That's beautiful, isn't it? The poet, November, is talking to our souls, as all great poets do. What November is talking about is having a random encounter with God. He's saying that a place becomes holy when a person encounters God there. In other words, a place is not made holy by God's presence, but by an encounter between God and a person that happens there. When a person perceives and is affected by the presence of God, holiness happens. These encounters leave a trace in a place which, if you open your heart, you can sense. It permeates the very stones and bricks of a structure, which continue to radiate that holiness that took place like a stone radiates warmth long after the sun has set. This is what I'm sensing here in this holy place. Trevor Dennis, a favorite author of mine, explores this idea in his short story, Transfiguration, from his book, Imagining God. I will read you a somewhat abridged and edited excerpt from that now. Exiled by a Pharaoh's anger, leaving an Egyptian dead in the sand. Victim of his impetuosity, driven by fear of arrest and execution. Fallen from princeling to shepherd of someone else's sheep and goats. Alone, Moses found himself on holy ground. His flock, or rather his father-in-law's flock, were walking all over it and leaving their marks upon it. He stood there with his sandals firmly tied to his feet, playing a tune on his shepherd's pipe, thinking of other things. There was at first nothing out of the ordinary about the place. Nothing strange, nothing miraculous, just a patch of ground like any other. But then, what was a moment before mere desert scrub became ablaze with the glory of God. That's how it is with the holy. A flicker of time becomes, without warning, God's moment. A place, a patch of ground, like any other, is suddenly God's territory, and sandals have to be removed, and things are changed, and new promises emerge, and new demands are felt. That is how it is with the holy. But these, you might say, are encounters that were seemingly random. So I suppose the next question is, how does one intentionally encounter God? Now, as far as I know, there is no foolproof, step-by-step method. We do, however, have some clues. David Seaburn, an American Presbyterian minister, gives us another hint. Writing about his experience in a small church in America, he says, "As I listen and watch, I see something I have often seen in small churches. I see it in the lined faces of the people, often older, years of shared living and faith holding them together. It is in the way they greet each other when passing the peace, a knowing handshake, a modest embrace. It is in their voices when they sing, often off-key, yet determined and joyful. It is in the creaking silence of prayer when the sanctuary itself seems to speak. It is something that flows between them, that moves within them, that circulates around them. It reminds me that although we often think of God as a noun, as someone from somewhere, in reality God is a verb. God happens. That is what I see in that sanctuary. Not that someone from somewhere is coming into the room and into the people from on high, but that what is occurring in the room is God. What is happening between these people constitutes God. What is emerging, what is unfolding, what is surfacing, materializing, springing, sometimes even gushing, is God. God is an action verb. God happens whenever there is compassion, wherever there is a struggle for justice, wherever those who are most often untouched are touched. For it to be God, I should be able to point at it and say, look at that. See what's happening? That's God. God is an action verb. What do you think? I understand what Seaborn was talking about, and I think you do too. As I look out at this congregation, at you, I can see it. I can see what's happening. God is here, right now. Between and among you, tying you to each other like the mortar that holds the stones of this building together. So, do you want to encounter God in the world? Yeah? Be the kindest, most loving, most generous, most compassionate, most wonderful you. And pay attention here. This is important. Have fun doing it. Immerse yourself in active love and enjoy it. Attune yourself to seeing love. Seek it out, and when you encounter it, breathe it in, bask in it, enjoy it. And put your own love outward into the world through your actions, your words, and your thoughts. With enough practice, you can do this all day, every day. Take as many moments as you can every day to actively appreciate somebody and something. Stroke a cat, pat a dog. Smile at another human being. Even better, smile at every human being you encounter. Be aware of the people around you. See them all, even the ones you don't like, as worthy of your attention and care, and treat them as such. It is in this state of being that you are most likely to encounter God in the world. God is in the kindness of your neighbor, the smile that you offer to a fellow human being, the tears that you shed for the suffering and injustice in Gaza and Ukraine, the happiness you feel for a friend's good fortune, and the donation that your significant other makes to a good cause. Let your actions be the inspiration for somebody to say, look at that. See what's happening? That's God. Take these actions, this Godding, if you will, with you when you leave this holy place. Approach the world the way George Fox, one of the founders of the Society of Friends, the Quakers, said. Be patterns. Be examples in all countries, places, islands, nations, wherever you come, that your carriage and life may preach among all sorts of people and to them. Then you will come to walk cheerfully over the world, answering that of God in everyone. Trust your instinct when it tells you that these things that come from within you, from that mysterious part of yourself that you call your heart, are God. Have faith that where God lives is inside the heart of a faithful person, inside you. So I suppose I'm asking you to cherish this church's wonderful building, but to do so with the knowledge that you are the church. You are the stones of which this church is built. Your relationships with each other are the mortar that holds them together. By exercising that which is of God inside you, and answering that which is of God in everyone, everywhere, you will encounter God. And these stones, the mortar that binds them together, and the places on which they lie will become holy. Thank you all. Thank you for allowing me to share in the holiness of your church today. Amen.